This is a follow-up for the talk on the secret of loving or maximum sex, and then the talk on maximum dating. And calling this one maximum love. Now, in approaching this subject, I need to get several things straight right from the beginning. First of all, the background of what I'm saying is that I believe your most important sex organ is the mind. Right up here in the mind, God's perspective of love, sex, dating, marriage, and everything is determined. So much of what I'll be presenting here will be on how to prepare your main sex organ, the mind, for a maximum sexual love and marriage relationship. The second point I need to get clarified is that I believe one of the keys is not so much finding the right person, but rather being the right person. I was at the University of Washington, and I was talking with a student. He was a senior. He had senior panic. And he was very concerned about finding the right mate. And so I said to him, well, what type of woman are you looking for? And he whipped out his 7-star diary. And he had a list of 14 things that he was looking for. And so I said to him, I said, well, Jim, how do you measure up to these 14 things? He said, what do you mean? Well, I said, these qualities that you're looking for in a woman, are these qualities found in your life? I said, it's not so much finding the right person, but rather being the right person. I said, Jim, if you want a queen, you need to be a king. If you want a good lover, you need to be a good lover. And he said, I never looked at it that way before. And so a lot that I'm presenting here is that I think if you take notes and you go over these things, it will help you to be the right type of person before you ever look for the right person. So it's in the area of becoming someone worth loving and being married to and having children with. Now, there's a problem that's developed today, and it's the problem that the joy and the passion has gone out of sex. And this goes back to our main sex organ, the mind. Rollo May, in his book Love and Will, says, therapists today rarely see patients who exhibit repression of sex. In fact, they come for just the opposite reason. A great deal of talk about sex, a great deal of sexual activity, practically no one complaining of cultural prohibitions or going to bed as often or with as many partners as one wishes. Rather, they complain of the lack of feeling and passion, end quote. Another therapist says, the curious thing about the ferment of discussion is how little anyone seems to be enjoying emancipation. So much sex and so little meaning or even fun in it. End quote. Armand Nicolai of Harvard says, sexual liberation and easier opportunities for sexual gratification for today's youth have not produced a lessening of aggression. In fact, it seems to have increased restlessness, discontent, and conflict. End quote. And I think the reason for this lack of joy and passion is because people have not prepared themselves for the type of relationship they're going to be entering into. And I believe for a maximum sexual love and marriage relationship, and that's what I always wanted, it's something that we need to work towards. Off in university campus, when I have the posters out called Maximum Sex, students right underneath with minimum effort. Well, I don't think that's possible. I believe what I'm experiencing in sex, love, and marriage with my wife is something I prepared myself for as a single person. Two areas I want to look at. One, various qualities in preparing for a maximum marriage, love, and sex relationship. And then the second area would be how to determine if your love is mature enough for a sexual love and marriage relationship. And I think when it's over, you'll be able to take these things, some of you now, some of you maybe a year, 2, 3 years from now, and use them to evaluate relationships that you have. First of all, qualities in preparation for marriage. Number one, I believe a key quality is a genuine commitment to Jesus Christ. Not only a commitment to Christ, but indications that an individual is growing in one's relationship with Christ. I have seen more and more in a marriage relationship when people, when the husband and the wife draw closer to Christ, they draw closer to each other. It's like a triangle, and the two bottom corners grow towards Christ. As they grow towards Christ, they grow towards each other. Now I think here comes in 1 Corinthians when it says not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers. I look at it this way. Don't be unequally yoked with believers. I mean, if you want your life to count for Christ and you want to mature and develop in your relationship, then you don't want to spend a lot of time in dating relationships, and you definitely don't want to marry someone that doesn't have the same desire and seen indications of growth. Probably one of the hardest things I've had in counseling is to meet couples where the wife would say or the husband say, well, I thought after we got married, your commitment to Christ would change and it would grow. Oh, no. You check that out ahead of time. In your own life and the life of your mate, that there's a genuine growth and commitment to the person of Jesus Christ. Then second, another quality is one must have a genuine acceptance of oneself. A genuine acceptance of oneself. You see, if an individual cannot accept oneself the way they are, then how in the world can they trust someone else to accept them the way they are? And you know one of the biggest problems we have today is the problem of self-image. People have such poor images of themselves. Some people, I think, if they have such poor images, they'd be allergic to themselves. And I think you see the logic there. If you cannot accept yourself the way you are, then you can't open yourself up to someone else to accept you the way you are. Now, one thing that helped me here was this. When I came to Jesus Christ and placed my trust in Him as Savior and Lord, the Bible clearly taught that God accepted me just the way I was. With all my shortcomings, with all my faults, everything else, God accepted me. Women and women. If God accepts us the way we are, why can't we accept ourselves? And this also opened me up to accept others. So I don't have to put people on a performance basis, but accept them the way they are and then go from there. No, it doesn't mean you don't see the shortcomings in your life. You don't see the areas that need to be improved. No, it means you're all the more realistic. I feel like I'm walking around with a sign on my back still under construction. But because I can accept myself, Josh McDowell, the way I am, then I can trust my wife to accept me the way I am. Therefore, I can open myself up to her. I can be open and free in my conversation. And here's a good way to test if you have a poor self-image. Is if you can take a sheet of paper and write down anyone you would rather be than yourself, you got an image problem. You know, I can take a sheet of paper and I can't think of anyone I would rather be than myself, with all my shortcomings, with my faults, everything else. And you know what started me thinking that way? When I realized out of 4 billion people alive, there is no one else in the world like me. I mean, some people may say, thank God. But, and it's true of you. Is there's no one else in the world like you, then why in the world do you want to become like someone else? I simply want to be all that God has created me as a personality to be. A genuine acceptance of oneself is a plus factor going into sex, love, and marriage. A third quality is developing the ability to listen. Sex is communication. It's probably 85% of sex is communication, verbally and physically. And communication is a two-way road. There's the person talking, the person listening. And you know, a lot of people never develop the ability to listen. And it can cause problems in a sex, love, and marriage relationship. Especially if you're like me, you're an extrovert. An extrovert always often has the problem of not listening, of always having to talk. Maybe that's why I became a speaker. But this is a problem. This is one area that I'm working on. And let me relate it to Dottie, my wife. Dottie came to me one time. We'd been married about 6-9 months. And she said, and I could tell she was hurt. She says, you know, honey, I really don't think you're interested in some of the areas of my life that I'm interested in. I really don't think you're interested in some of the little areas of my life. Boy, that was like driving a knife through my heart. I said, what do you mean? She says, well, you never seem to listen to me. She said, even when you seem to listen to me, it's like your mind is off. And you know, one indication that you have a good relationship is that little phrases develop that are only meaningful to you. And a phrase here, and I won't share you some of the phrases we developed, but one, when my wife wants to communicate to me, that I'm looking at her, but I'm thinking of something else. She'll say, you're on a free speech platform in Bolivia. And she says that because I got my start debating and doing free speech in Latin America with the Marxists. And so she realized how in those times I really had to concentrate on it. So if she wants to get a point across to me, she says, honey, you're on a free speech platform in Bolivia. And immediately she's communicating to me, honey, you're not listening. Maybe you're looking at me, but your mind is off somewhere else. And so she brought this up to me. Now, all the time I was interested, but because I was not taking time to listen, I was communicating to her that I wasn't interested, just because I wasn't listening. So my philosophy is, if you want somebody to think you're bleeding, you got to hemorrhage. And so I went out of my way to communicate to my wife that I'm listening, that I'm interested. And I had to work at it because it didn't come naturally for me. And she would come into my office or my study, and I don't care what I was doing. I'd put it down, and I'd turn around, and I'd concentrate. And you know, I even had to say to myself, I am going to hear everything my wife says. I'm going to respond to everything my wife says. I would make a point when I would call home, whether from the office or on the road, to listen to my wife. It was worth the extra money to allow her to express some of the ideas that she has, some of the things in her heart that day, even though it cost a little more money. Well, one time I came over on a trip, I walked in, she threw her arms around me and said, honey, thank you so much. I said, for what? For listening to me. And then she started to share how no longer at the breakfast table do I read the newspaper. I can't remember the last time at the breakfast table at home or any meal at home I ever read a newspaper. Since my wife pointed this out to me. I try to concentrate on her. And do you know, that paid off in almost every area of our relationship, right down to the physical. Because now my wife was feeling the little areas of her life are important to me. And you know, I still have to work on this. I still have to concentrate. And I recommend to those of you here, those listening by tape and radio, that maybe you need to just go home with your wife and sit down over a cup of tea and just listen. Another quality in being prepared for marriage and love and sex is developing the capability to respond to authority in a positive way. You see, here are two people coming from two totally different backgrounds and everything else. And they're coming together in a love, sex, and marriage relationship and developing into a family relationship with children. And if these people have not learned to respond to authority, they're going to have conflict. I always said one of the most important things I ever learned living in Latin America was this. I learned to respond to the authority even though I thought it might be wrong. Because ultimately, the responsibility for Argentina was not mine. It was the Argentine Christians. So even though I thought it was best to do something a certain way, often I'd never say anything or anything else because they thought it was best to do it another way. And I said the lesson I learned was to wholeheartedly support someone even though maybe I didn't think it was the best way to do it. Oh, has that paid off in my life in many areas and the relationship with my wife? And when you learn to respond to authority, then it comes natural to respond to your mate. And learning, maybe you don't want to go to that movie, but you learn to respond to go to that film. Let me give an illustration with Dottie. We'd always dreamed of having our own home, and we moved in, and it wasn't a very expensive house, but it took every penny we had. And we moved in, and I thought the house was immaculate. And it was Spanish style, you know, the big, thick adobe walls and the big beams in the living room and everything. And I thought it was immaculate. And my wife says, honey, could we paint the kitchen? Well, I thought the kitchen looked great. Yeah, it was kind of a dirty mustard yellow, but it wasn't peeling. I said, honey, I don't think it needs to be painted. She said, please. I really like to have it a different color yellow. Well, I started to think about it. Now, that meant a lot to my wife. Now, I could have cared less. But the painting, the kitchen, meant a lot to my wife. Now, she probably spends more time in there than I do, at least when I'm on the road. When I'm home, she doesn't. We got married to be together. I usually cook the meat or the fish. She prepares the vegetables. We do things together. I would say most of the time when I'm home, I even make the beds. And, you know, it really gets me to hear these people, well, that's your job, this is my... Man, we got married to be together. So if it's making the bed together, cooking together, at least we're together. And so I said, okay, honey. Now here is where I had learned to respond to authority. So here's something that I really wasn't all that excited about. I didn't think it needed to be done, but my wife really wanted to do it. Or she wanted me to do it. Yeah, that was even worse. And I said, okay, honey, we'll paint it. And then she said, well, could we have it yellow with white trim? I said, oh, honey, you don't know what work that is. I had a painting company, and I painted my way through college. And I said, honey, that's a lot of work. She said, please. I said, okay. Now, I didn't. See, I would have ruined the whole impact in our relationship. I said, okay, I'll do it. Then I'd been robbed of the joy of it, and so would she. I said, okay, honey. Well, I got up, and I put on the first coat. And, of course, with I have to admit, it really was an ugly mustard yellow that was on there, after I started painting it. And it was so bad, it took at least two coats to even, dull the color. So I put the first coat on, it was bleeding through and everything. But my wife came in, and you women have an opportunity of getting what you want in this way. Yeah, ladies. You women have that capacity to make a man feel like a king. Well, my wife came in, and she made me feel like a king. You thought I had painted the Sistine kitchen. And she just expressed her appreciation to me. You know what happened? I went right out and I put the second coat on, and I got out of bed at 4:30 the next morning and went in there, painted the trim, and then I could hardly wait for my wife to come in and say, honey, what a wonderful job. But I remember it was all over. We had our first meal in there, and she came around the table and put her arm around my neck and gave me a hug, and she said, honey, I know you didn't want to do it, but thank you so much. Can you imagine how that paid off in our relationship? Tremendous benefits. Because we learn to respond to authority. And when I see someone in constant rebellion, in high school, in college, at work and things, I really wonder what type of relationship they're going to have. They're going to have rebellion and conflict. Learn to respond to authority. And besides, if you have trouble responding to authority, you often have trouble responding to the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ, not only the direction of your mate. Another quality in preparing for marriage is a clear conscience from the past. A clear conscience from the past. Boy, going into a sex, love, and marriage relationship, knowing that your life has been such it's been honoring to God, or if it wasn't, you've gone back and made it right. Sometimes that calls for going back and asking forgiveness. Let me share with you something that helped me, especially after I became a Christian. I developed the attitude that I wanted to treat a woman on a date the same way that night I wanted someone to be treating the woman I was going to marry. Ooh, that gets personal, doesn't it? Has your date life been that way? Have you treated a man on a date or treated a woman the way you want someone to be treating the person you're going to marry? Have you led someone on the way you'd like someone to lead on the person you're going to marry? Have you been dishonest in your relationship in a way that you'd like someone to be dishonest with the one you're going to marry? I've always wanted to be able to look my daughter square in the eyes and say, Kelly, honey, I pray that the men that you date and the man that you marry treat you the same way I treated your mother, and do it with a clear conscience. Or this way, in a clear conscience from the past, conduct your date life in such a way that you will look forward to your mate meeting your former dates. Oh, yeah. You know, some of the former women I've dated, especially one that I almost married, has become one of the close friends of my wife, one of our dearest friends. And I look forward for my wife meeting the women I date. Well, not all of them. To really honest with you, most of them. Some of the BC days, I don't know. Then another quality is developing a forgiveness attitude. The ability of being able to forgive. Oh, this is so crucial. Remember the movie Love Story? Love Story says true love is not having to say I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry, I don't think that's love. I think true love has the capacity to say I'm sorry, because in true love there's forgiveness. And see, If your mate or you, let's say you, if you have not developed the capacity to forgive, then your mate will never feel free to share a lot of things with you. Because they always have that fear that they won't be forgiven. But when you know that your mate, and I know with Dottie, I can't imagine anything I could do that I couldn't confess to my wife. Because I know she's forgiving. But what so often happens, a person forgives and then they bring it back up again. Well, I told you so. You know, Jesus could have done that with Peter. He said, Peter, you're going to go out and deny me 3 times. Oh, no, I'm not. And he went out and blew it. And I could just see Jesus come back and say, Peter, I told you so. And then rub it in. No. Genuineness and forgiveness. You know what helped me here? Again, it goes back to my relationship with God through Jesus Christ. When I realized that God totally forgave me, then I thought, well, why can't I forgive others? I mean, if God's forgiven me, then I should be able to forgive others. Being a forgiving individual is a tremendous asset in a sex, love, and marriage relationship. Another quality is a proper understanding of what one's purpose is in life. I think it's so important before marriage that the couple discusses their goals in life, their purpose, what they desire to achieve in life. See, what so often happens is they never discuss their purpose in life. And so often purposes are a little different, and then afterwards, they grow apart. Where if before marriage you sit down, you talk out your goals in life, your purposes, then afterwards, instead of growing apart, they can grow parallel because there's an understanding. And this is why, in fact, I'm convinced that the more you can discuss before you get married, the better it is. Getting it out in the open and discussing it. Every imaginable issue that you can think of. In fact, there's a book called Sexual Happiness in Marriage by Dr. J. Herbert Miles, which is just excellent. And I recommend couples, when they get engaged, to read the book together. Now, it's frank. I mean, even a little embarrassing sometimes. But getting together, not separately, together as a couple, and read it. And one area is purpose in life. This is why Dottie and I, when we got engaged, it was in Austin, Texas, and we went down to the river there in Austin. We sat down for about 2 or 3 hours. We discussed various aspects, how many children, what our goals were in life, what our purpose was. As a result of that, we've been growing together. Another thing to discuss, and have an understanding about possessions, earning power. I'm amazed how many people have little things such as the type of furniture become a thorn in the flesh in a marriage relationship. And mainly is because they'd never talked it out ahead of time. There was a couple that we lived next to and we counseled. They never discussed anything before they got married. And they decided she'd have her checking book and her maiden name, and he'd have his checking book and his maiden name. And all their conversation was, this is mine, that is yours. This is ours, that is yours, this is mine. And almost all their conversation was me, mine, yours. Not us, ours, we. And the Bible talks about two becoming one. And she just always dreamed that they would have antiques, early American antiques. Why, her grandmother was an early American antique, or had early American antiques. And she just figured that they would have early American antiques. Well, he just thought they would have Mediterranean style. His parents had Mediterranean style. He liked Mediterranean style. So after they got married, they never discussed their possessions. They never really become one. And they went shopping together once, and that was it. When he bought something, it was early American. When she bought something, it was an early American, or he bought Mediterranean, she bought early American antique. When he got her something for Christmas, it was Mediterranean. It's like love is buying your wife a pool table for Christmas. I buy my wife something for Christmas. She says, honey, is it something you like? And I say, yeah. They're related, and they ended up in divorce. But I remember one night I went over to counsel with them. And I walked in, and I didn't know what the situation was yet, and I liked early American antiques, and there was this early American rocker. And I made a big to-do over it. I mean, I just adored it, thought it was wonderful. Well, the more I talked, the madder he got. Because that was their thorn in the flesh. Of course, when she left, the couch went, the TV stayed. The bed went, the dresser stayed. And you could tell what was his and what was hers, and they never became one. When Dottie and I got engaged, one thing we started to talk about was in the area of possessions. And one was like, for example, furniture. Now, I always wanted Spanish-style furniture. I'd lived in Mexico for a while, and I had some money saved up from my dad's estate, and had already picked out an artist and everything else to do all hand-make, all the Spanish furniture and everything. Well, my wife just couldn't stand Spanish furniture. She liked early American antiques. So we did this. We prayed together about it, and I said, well, honey, we're spending our honeymoon in Mexico, so why don't you go look at some of the Spanish furniture with me, go up to Tlaquepaque and where the artists are, and I'll show you the factories where they make them. And I said, then we get back. I said, you know, let's go to some people's homes that have early American antiques, and let's go to some auctions, some stores, and just see what happens. And we were in Mexico. We went, and then we got back. We were on a tour, a university tour, and we were in Arkansas, and our plane got fogged in. And so we started looking around in antique shops. And pretty soon I just said, honey, why don't we have early American? And you know, and then it made so much sense. It's the only type of furniture you buy, you take home, and it goes up in value. I mean, so it's fun. You go out and you buy an antique round oak table, and you take it home and use it for 3 years, and it doubles or triples in value. And so now you go into our house, and everything, except our kids and my wife, everything... Even our light fixtures, early American antiques. And what was so funny, when we got our house out in San Bernardino, it was a Spanish-style house. And we were moving in, and I started laughing. I said, you know, honey, this is really funny. I said, I wanted Spanish furniture, and you wanted early American style. And I said, here we have early American antiques in a Spanish house. And I said, that shows that God has a sense of humor. These are just some areas that are very helpful in preparing for a maximum sex, love, and marriage relationship. Then, how do you know if your love is mature enough for a sexual love and marriage relationship? Let me give you some suggestions. And these are very practical, I pray. There's some things that helped me as I was evaluating my own relationships. First of all, true love involves a response to the total person being loved. It means the intellectual, the spiritual, the social, the physical. True love does not find its source in one area. See, most people get married to a body. You don't marry a body, you marry a person. And you know, one of the greatest challenges to me was getting to know, for example, my wife intellectually. She has a sharp mind. She's probably the best editor I've ever had in any of my material. And she has helped me more in making things simple. And one of the greatest challenges in our dating relationships was getting to know her intellectually. It's a response to a total person. And yet, you know, most of the people that I counsel today, most of their relationship finds its source in just one or two areas, and that's it. It's not well-rounded. It's not a total response to a total person. Another quality of true love, or knowing if your love is mature enough, is that true love has the ingredients of reverence. There is reverence in true love. Let me ask you, in the relationships if you've had in dating situations, have you felt there's been a reverence there? You know, some of the phrases that show irreverence in a relationship is like, if you love me, you'll let me. Just this once, everyone's doing it. These are just some signs of the lack of reverence. But I'm convinced that if there is reverence and respect in a relationship, that would take you through so many problems. My wife really respects me. And you know what that does to me? That motivates me to be a person that's worth being respected by my wife and my children. Love has reverence in it, true love. Another way of knowing your love is mature is that true love is characterized by an attitude of self-giving. True love thinks of the other person first, not what you can get, but what you can give. I spell love G-I-V-E. What can I give? If two people go in a relationship with the attitude they're going to give 100%, it comes out 50-50. That's the result of two people with a 100% attitude, I'm going to give. And I've learned one thing, you always get more back than what you give. The majority of the problems in our country could be solved through an attitude of giving. Almost every problem we face, security, police, economics, everything, just through an attitude of giving to the other person first. And I think in true love, you have that aspect of giving. In fact, it's one test, I think, to find out if you're truly in love. Is that, does it build up the desire to give to the other person, to build the other person up, to think of them first? That is a tremendous test of love. Then another way of seeing if your love is mature is that true love accepts responsibility. With true love goes responsibility in the family, finances, health, sickness, children. You see, if you do not believe that your mate is responsible for the relationship, then you can never totally give to that individual. You'll always be holding back and not giving. But when you know both partners are responsible, then man, it opens you up to abandon yourself to your mate. And that's what God calls for in a maximum sex and love relationship, is a total abandonment to your mate. But you can only do that when each one has demonstrated responsibility. Can you see if your mate isn't responsible, how you'd always be holding back? Never totally trusting. And so many today want sex without responsibility. They want intimacy without commitment. That's so much of sex today in our country in Europe. And it's robbing a lot of people. Sex was never made to be outside of the context of commitment and responsibility. Then another test of love is, in true love, there is a pain in separation. Now, you can afford to be apart. If you can, it's usually infatuation. But there is a sense of pain in being separated from each other. But also in true love, there's a tremendous joy in one's presence. A tremendous joy in one's presence, and that joy increases. If any test of love, I think this is the main one. Is there a pain in separation and a tremendous increase in the joy of one's presence? Let me illustrate this. At Virginia Polytechnical, a young man came to me. He was a graduate student there. And his fiancée worked at another university. I think it was Virginia, University of Virginia. And he came to me after a series on campus, and he said, "Josh, I've got to talk with you." So we got together, and he said, "I need your help and counsel." And I said, "What area?" And he said, "Well, I'm engaged and we're supposed to be married Saturday." Well, this was about Tuesday. He said, "Already twice we've called off the wedding. Once, right up to a week before." And he said, "My problem is, I really don't know if I love her." I said, "You gotta be kidding." I said, "You should have figured that out months or years ago, before you ever proposed to her." I said, "You have been so unfair to her. And now it's Tuesday and the wedding is Saturday and you don't know if you love her?" He says, "That's my problem." I said, "Well, let me ask you some questions." I said, "Have you had those, what I call long lost weekends?" He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Like, well, maybe at Christmas or Thanksgiving, you know, Thanksgiving's on a Thursday, so maybe you go to her house or she comes to your house or friends or something. And you have all Wednesday night, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday." He says, "Oh yeah, we've had a lot of those." I said, "Let me ask you what your attitude is on those long lost weekends." I said, "You really look forward to it? You can hardly wait, you know, for 2-3 weeks before you're counting the days and the hours and even the minutes until that Wednesday where school's out and you jump in your car, you fly." jump in your car and fly, is what I did. Probably the only time I ever got speeding tickets was trying to find Dottie. But, or get to Dottie. But, I said, then, you get there Wednesday night and you can hardly wait to see her. And then Thursday and Friday. And then by Saturday, you don't even want to think about Sunday. Because you know when it's Sunday comes, you have to leave. And so you just kind of blank it out of your mind. And Saturday night comes and you don't even want to go to bed because you know you have to get up and leave. I said, or do you look forward to those times of being together? And you get there Wednesday night and you're all excited on Thursday. But then about Friday, you just start thinking, you know, well, it'll be good when Sunday comes about. You know, and you look forward to Saturday because you'll be together. But Sunday, you kind of need that break. And you just kind of look forward to being away again. Kind of like Richard Burton and Liz Taylor. They said they were so in love they couldn't stand to be together. That's profound. I said, which one demonstrates your relationship? And he said, well, for a long time, he said, I guess the first. But he said, last 6-9 months, he said, I have to admit, I sort of look forward to those breathers. Then I said, for heaven's sakes, don't get married. You don't marry someone you can live with. You marry someone you can't live without. I said, don't get married until you don't want Sunday to come around. That joy with a present doesn't diminish after a few days where you look for a break from it. But it increases so much you want to block out the day you have to leave. And this was something that was very obvious in a relationship between Dottie and me and another young lady by the name of Paula. I dated Paula for 3 years. And we thought it must have been love because we were so compatible. Everyone was telling us we were for each other. Everyone was telling us we ought to get married. Well, we're both committed to Jesus Christ. We love to be together. We've never argued and everything else. We have the same goals in life. It must be love. Well, compatibility and love are two different things. And, you know, I really felt that I was in love with Paula. We had so many neat times together. I'm a better individual because of Paula. I really believe that God used many women in my life to prepare me for my wife. And I pray vice versa also. But you know, Paula and I would spend those weekends together and it was fun. But when it came to that Sunday, the break was coming and it was okay. I was sort of looking forward to it. And it wasn't a way long to look forward to being back. But with Dottie, it came Thursday. I didn't want to think about Friday. And Friday I didn't want to come because there was Saturday, and Saturday's the day before I had to leave. And by Saturday, I was thinking of every excuse possible to not leave Sunday. And remember, when Sunday came, I didn't even set the alarm. Thought if I slept in, I wouldn't have to leave. And then remember, we went to the first lost weekend. It was down in Houston at Jimmy Williams. Some of you know Jimmy Williams from Probe. To his parents' place. And that place was so big, it was like the Houston Hilton. And, boy, I didn't want to leave. And I remember I took her out to the airport. And we were flying, she was flying Braniff. She was going back to Austin, and I was going to Chicago or somewhere for a conference. And I was just saying, oh, Lord, let Braniff be true to their reputation, the largest unscheduled airline. You know, I think it's probably the only time Braniff was ever on time. In fact, I think they left 2 minutes early. So I remember I set my clock back a few minutes thinking it would help. But I remember we stood out there in the lobby and I kissed her goodbye and she walked down that corridor and took that turn from the jetway into the airplane. It was all I could do to hold myself back from running down there and grab her and say, don't leave! And you know, in all the times you're together, that increased. And I think that is a sign of true love. The joy in the presence of that person increases, it grows. Another quality, another way of seeing if your love is mature, is that in true love, there is an enjoyment of each other without the constant need of physical involvement. That's so key. In true love, you can enjoy each other apart from the physical. And And the reason I emphasize that is, about only when you can enjoy each other apart from the physical does the physical really take on meaning. Because you see, the physical should be the expression of the love and the relationship you have, not the cause of it. Enjoyment of each other apart from constant physical attention. And when I see couples that constantly have their arms around each other and having to have their hands in each other and everything else, I really question that relationship. And I meet so many people that are married, the only way they have expressing their love is through the physical. Now, you got to realize that sex is not Elmer's glue. The physical will never glue a relationship together. In fact, it'll probably tear it apart if that's all you got. See, the physical should be the expression of it, not the cause of the relationship. Then true love manifests itself in a protective attitude. You see, if you have a giving type of love, where you think of the other person first, their enjoyment, then you will protect that person. And in true love, there's a tremendous protective attitude. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't know the faults of your mate and everything else, but you protect them even in those areas. And when I hear what some couples say in public, you wonder what they say in private. I mean, the sly remarks about each other, putting down the other person. I really question that relationship. You know, the last person to come to criticize me is my wife. She'll scratch your eyes out. Now, my wife knows my shortcomings. Well, let me tell you, she does. But boy, she doesn't like somebody else coming along and criticizing me in those areas. And the last person to come to criticize my wife is me. Let me tell you, I love my wife. I protect my wife. And I'll punch your lights out. No. But I think in true love there is. You know, you go in someone's house and the wife burnt the roast. And I've heard things like this. Well, you'll never be another Betty Crocker. What do we have, a burnt offering? You know, true love, you don't have remarks like that. At least if there are remarks like that, there's immediate repentance and ask for forgiveness and an expression of love. And I think that's indicative of true love, a protective attitude. That's why I never like my wife to read letters to the editors. She always wants to go right in and tangle with the editor. Someday in some campus, I'm just going to turn my wife loose on the editor. Oh, let me tell you, I love it. You know, it's so neat. You know, like here on campus. And the more controversy you have, the better it is. You get all that free advertising, and some people just come see if it's bad as they say. And then they come and go back and tell their friends it's better than they thought. And it really helps, all that free advertising. I remember I used to go, when I first got started, I used to have people go around and deface my posters. Because it got more attention. And people would come. I remember in Argentina, they're in Uruguay, the Marxists went around on all my posters. They wrote CIA agent. I thought it meant Christians in Action. But I'm optimistic. But it backfired on them because most of them had never personally seen or heard a CIA agent. So we would pack the auditoriums out. Because we whetted the people's curiosity. So finally we went around and wrote CIA on our posters. Then another characteristic of true love is that in true love, there is a dynamic growth. A dynamic growth. I do not believe true love can remain stagnant. It either diminishes or it grows. It cannot remain stale very long. And you can look at your relationships, your dating relationships. Do you see a growth? If you don't, And I'd either make some changes or back off. Because the same thing would result later. I was at University of Tennessee. Speaking of the faculty administration, there, I don't remember the exact number, there's probably between 200 to 300 out. Administrators. And I'd only been married 6 months. And I was speaking on economics, but I made some comments about my wife, just a few, like I always do, you know, what's most upon your heart will be most upon your lips. And so I talk about my wife and Jesus all the time. I'm a fanatic. I cannot change my mind and will not change my subject. And so I made a couple comments about my wife, and this young professor, he probably looked about 27, 28 years old, probably associate professor. Maybe he was a teaching assistant. No. He was a professor. And he spoke up right while I was speaking. And just the most sarcastic voice, he said, "How long you been married?" I said, 6 months. He said, "Wait until you're married 5 years and see how you talk." Right in front of everyone. You know, people used to, before I got engaged, they'd always say, "Well, wait until you're engaged and see how you talk." Then I'd get engaged and they'd say, "Wait until you're married and see how you talk." Then I got married. Then they say, "Wait until you're 5 years married and see how you talk." Now I'm married 9 years. "Wait until you're married 20 years and see how you talk." Well, I guess we'll have to check it out in eternity. So what do you say in a situation like that? I guess this person's been married over 5 years and I hadn't been. Well, at that time, a man stood up in the back and he walked down the side. I didn't know who he was. He looked a man about 65, 70. And everyone looked. And he came in the front and found out he was a very respected individual. He was Roger Rusk, or Dean Rusk, former Secretary of State's brother, Roger Rusk, a very highly thought of professor at the University of Tennessee, dynamic Christian. And he won. I didn't know who he was even at this time. And I thought, oh boy, this guy's going to punch me out. And he walked down around, came up in front of these 200-300 professors, and he walked up to the front, about two rows to the front of that young professor, and he leaned over and he said, "Mister, it gets better after 55 years. And I just went, "Whew." But I've always been thankful to him for that. But there is a tremendous growth. Now let's wrap it up here. What do you do? Well, let me recommend this. Read 1 Corinthians 13. You see, you know where I got most of this stuff from? The Bible, the greatest book on love and sex and marriage. Everything I've said here can be found in the Scriptures. And what you might do is, first of all, read 1 Corinthians 13. And take the things that I've shared here and the qualities for marriage and the tests of true love and see if you can find them in that passage. 1 Corinthians 13. And then take these concepts and read through the New Testament. And see all the different references and illustrations of each one of these areas. And then next, work out steps on how to implement some of these things in your life, especially the qualities. But probably the biggest thing that helped me was my relationship with Jesus Christ. And as I grew in my relationship with Christ, many of these things that I've been talking about started to become a reality. These are some things that helped me, and maybe they will help you.